Let me lay out this scenario for you. You're in your late 20s. You just sold a company for under $20 million. And you've reached this massive goal that you've set for yourself, this pinnacle, this thing that you thought maybe wouldn't happen for many, many, many more years or maybe never would happen. You reached it. But you go to find out that over the coming years, those are the least happy and possibly the most miserable years of your life. And you start to think, you know, why is it this way? Why is it that I reached this amazing goal? I had this amazing financial payoff. I, you know, reached the thing that said, man, once I get there, then I will be happy. Then I'll have the tail at, you know, by a string. But you weren't. What goes on with us high-achieving entrepreneurs, us high-achieving people? Well, today's guest on this episode of the CareCast is that exact person, Seth Biewekley, a good friend of mine, a mentor of mine. He actually has an office here at the Loft Entrepreneur Workspace here in Roseburg, Oregon, works just a couple offices away. He is that guy. He sold his company with his father when he was in his late 20s for just under $20 million. And he went on to have a period of years where he was really searching for that happiness, really searching for that passion and purpose. And he drills down to what it is. You know, why was it that when he reached this amazing pinnacle that he was really, really miserable? A lot of entrepreneurs go through the same thing. And Seth wrote a book called Ambition, and it launched just a couple of days ago. We had a chance to get him on this podcast and talk about ambition, talk about how ambition can be a great thing or a terrible thing for people. Talk about how ambition can drive for big, amazing change in accomplishment. It can also drive us in the other way and have us completely flame out and be miserable. Okay. And we're going to be going through his story. So Seth's going to be talking about his story, how he went through and started the company and sold it and what those years looked like and why he was miserable, you know, after looking at it in hindsight. And then how also he had a second chance. He had a second chance to go start another company with this new way of thinking, this new way of living life, basically, that ended up doing tens of millions of dollars a year. And we're going to be talking about exactly how big that company got. And he ended up selling that company this year. So he's gone through that again. But this time around, guys and gals, this time around, it was a bigger payoff, but he's treated it way, way differently from a mental mindset standpoint, where he's not falling into those same traps as before that we oftentimes fall into when we're a high achieving person. So whether you are going out there achieving those goals you want to achieve, or whether you're not, you know, whether there's the disappointment where you're not achieving those and you're a high achieving person, you need to listen to this episode of the CareCast. And you need to go buy the book too. Just go to readambition.com, readambition.com. You can grab the book and walk through Seth's story and walk through how high achievers, ambitious people can deal with being a high achiever through successes, through failures, and really be what we all want to be, which is happy, content, and impactful in our lives and leave a legacy. Okay. So we're going to be talking about those things in a big way, guys and girls, in this episode of the CareCast. So strap in. And I want to leave it with this before we introduce Seth. Okay. If you are a high achiever and you're not at the pinnacle of your happiness right now, there's reasons why. And we're going to be diving into exactly why and exactly how to get over that through this podcast and through Seth's book, Ambition. Okay. If you're a high achiever and you're hitting some successes, but you just never feel that contentment, you always feel this angst for something more, this book is going to help you still achieve high at a high level, but feel insane purpose, feel insane passion, leaving a legacy while you're also doing it very, very intentionally. You're happy. Okay. So I want to introduce Seth to this podcast, guys and gals. While I do, go online if you're in front of your computer on your phone and look up readambition.com or find Ambition from Seth Biewekley on Amazon and get the book and then dive into the podcast. This could be a life changing next 45 minutes for you guys and gals. You will not be sorry. Welcome in, Seth. This is one I've been looking forward for a while, and we've had to kind of push it off a little bit because of a certain event that is actually happened yesterday and is happening all this week. And hopefully the event isn't just a one-time event, but it's something where people keep on wanting to engage in this masterpiece of work that Seth put together. Now that I've built up the suspense here, you know, Seth has become a good friend of mine, is a mentor. He actually works here out of the Loft Entrepreneur Workspace here in Roseburg. And we've talked about the Loft many times with you guys over the years. It's where Carrot's headquartered. It's our entrepreneur co-workspace that we started in 2010 now. And we're fortunate enough to have some amazing people here. And Seth is one of those guys. And when Seth and I first met, I didn't know what his background was. I didn't know the things that he had achieved, the things he had gone through, the things he would go through in the future years, you know, after we originally met. But now looking back at what he has, you know, what kind of what his life has shaped out to be so far, it's going to be really exciting seeing what the next chapter is. And no pun intended on chapter, Seth just launched a book yesterday. It's called Ambition. We're going to be talking about ambition quite a bit here on this Carrot Cast, because I know everyone watching or listening to this episode of the Carrot Cast, you're an ambitious person. You would not be trying to improve yourself if you weren't. You know, you would not be on this episode of the Carrot Cast if you weren't ambitious, trying to make a difference, trying to grow something, whether it's your business or yourself. And that's what we're going to be helping you do today. And Seth, welcome on the Carrot Cast, man.
Trevor, it's great to be here. Like you said, we've been looking forward to this for a long time, and I'm really happy to be on the Carrot Cast.
Dude, I'm glad to have you, and I'm going to kind of throw out something we were talking about before. It's kind of funny having you at your house and having me at the office, because literally our offices are 15 feet apart. But we haven't figured out the setup yet here at the loft, even with our studio, to actually do two people in one room and record it well. So we're doing it on Skype so we can make them like our other podcasts. But Seth is here in Roseburg, Oregon. But man, I want you to give people a little bit of an insight onto kind of what life is like for you. What's your family like? Kind of what are you doing right now since you sold your latest company this year?
Sure. It's been a, 9 months of kind of trying to get clear about what I want to do next. Part of that is resisting going back to what I came from just because it's comfortable or, that the odds of success are higher there, and really trying to get clear on, what is it that I'm supposed to be doing? What do I think is going to be the best for my family at this stage of life? So I have four children. I have a daughter who's fully grown and out and about. She lives in Salem with her husband, who's a teacher, and she is a project manager, actually works for somebody else who's in our office doing social media management and whatnot. Digital legacy building, like they like to call it. And then I have three boys at home. So I have a 15-year-old who's a sophomore and an eighth grader and a sixth grader. And so life is pretty busy around our house. And so we've been just working through all of the processes of being a busy family in a small growing community here in Southern Oregon.
So I've got the book here. I've got the book Ambition here, and I'm not sure if that got in front of the camera well enough. And while we are going to be mentioning the book here, this episode, guys and gals, is not to get you just to buy the book. The book is what's going to expand on what we're talking about here. So, I heard it way back when. I don't know who said it, and probably there's been many, many people who've said it, where, people have spent their lifetime learning something or growing something, and then they wrap it into something that costs $20. And so many people ignore that. So many people ignore all the wisdom that people have lived before them that they wrap into these amazing little books. And some of your story, your story is really fascinating. We're going to be talking about some of it today. And so the reason that I really have resonated with this book, but also just the things in it, the whole topic, is because, so we've talked about this, but I'm going to open up to the Carrot community. I'm going through a lot of the stuff that you're talking about in that book, where, I am a pretty ambitious person. I do find myself many times, not celebrating those wins, kind of like you say in the book, there's that curvature of the earth where you get up to a goal and then all of a sudden you see the next goal beyond it. I am in that phase, and that's why it resonated with me so much. I feel so many people that are entrepreneurs that are listening to this are in the same phase as well. You might be doing well or you might be ambitious, but there's something deep inside of you that's holding you back from being completely happy and content and fulfilled. You feel that if you just do this next thing, once I get there, I'll be happy or fully happy. This book really explores that based on your journey, where that's not the truth. There is something that is the truth that helps you get there, and it's not those things. So Seth, why don't you kind of give people a quick insight on where ambition led you? I know you've started companies, you've sold them for in the tens of millions. You have a lot of experience in what helped you be happy and content versus what didn't.
Sure. Well, thanks for that intro. It's interesting, though we live in a town of 20 plus thousand people, that gravity has a way of pulling entrepreneurs and driven people together. And so I really love that we've been able to have a community, and it's just the way it works. It's like magnets. We're kind of drawn together and people recognize those gifts and those common character traits of each other. And, you know, leaders are attracted to leaders. And so, you know, from my journey, I grew up an hour south from here, literally in a commune in the woods, mm-hmm. which is not the place that the normal high growth technology company CEO comes from. And so, you know, I had a dad who was a very intentional mentor and got launched into life by, you know, work life, building a business with him. And so we ended up selling that when I'm in my late 20s and, you know, for, you know, millions of dollars, as you said. And I'm reluctant to say that because people, you know, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It was certainly a lot of money to me at the time. But I also observed after that, it was kind of one of the least fulfilling seasons of my life because, you know, and I got clear that, you know, I'm not particularly money motivated. You know, money is a sign of doing things right. But I also got up close with, all right, you know, what does it mean to be a driven person? What does it mean to be ambitious? And why am I always agitated? And why, when everything, all the boxes have been checked, and, you know, all we have to do is look around the corner and see people who have a lot less than us, who seem to be satisfied. It's like, why am I, with all the stuff, you know, dissatisfied? And it's really a common characteristic I observe with people that are wired to achieve. And I wouldn't even call it a negative characteristic. It just is. You know, a lot of people would say, oh, you know, he's really ambitious. They would say that as a positive. Or in the case of Caesar, you remember the great quote was, you know, Caesar's ambitious, and they assassinated him because. Or I can even think about the recent presidential election, and I won't go very far down this path. you know, both of these candidates were described as having unrestrained ambition, right? Mm. But that was sent out in a negative context. And I guess the point of really looking with ambitious and hard-driven people is that we allow ourselves to think, all right, if I just do this one more thing, or if I get this, then I'm going to settle down, I'm going to be happy. But the truth is we are wired for achievement. But we often think that achievement is going to lead us to this place of satisfaction and contentment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the book, I dive into the fact that that's actually a false thing. We believe a lot of false things that people tell us and that we tell ourselves. And, you know, what I discovered over time is that really by understanding our purpose, by directing ourselves and developing a relationship with gratitude, we can start to have some perspective. Mm-hmm. And once we have that perspective, then we can become, you know, more effective leaders. For me, and I think for us, is the reality is because we are hardwired, you know, and in the book, I dive into this topic of what does it mean to be ambitious, right? What are the influences that make us ambitious? Is it the way we were raised, you know, kind of that nurture argument, or is it nature? Is it our hardwiring? Mm-hmm. You know, and in my case, you know, coming from a commune where, you know, there was some kind of funky leadership, you know, I had a little chip on my shoulder. And so I felt like maybe I had something to prove. And so I carry that into my work life. And, you know, then I develop conflicts because I've got this edge and this attitude about me. And you know, as I began to look at that, I said, yeah, you know, there's some of how I'm wired is a reaction to things that happened in my life, mm-hmm. you know, as we're growing up. And I like to say, you know, our dysfunction will drive us until we deal with it.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
And I think we all have a little of that. Nobody comes through life unscathed. You know, we get bumped around and at some point we get enough, I don't know whether it's experience or hard knocks, where we start to say, all right, what's driving me here? Mm-hmm. And then the other side of that is I do believe that there is hardwiring. Our good friend David Littlejohn had me on the radio station the other day, and he called it, you know, there are finders and there are minders, right? Mm-hmm. And I had this epiphany once. It's like, you know, life can be divided into people that want to make a difference and people that want to stay out of trouble.
Yep.
Right. And obviously those things break down if you take them too far. But the point of it is there is a certain amount of hardwiring that I think a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of business owners have, which is I want to do something. I want to build something. I want to fix something. And because of that, you know, kind of say those are our influences, part of its nature, part of its nurture. But then you move into, all right, what are the implications of being ambitious? Mm-hmm. What's funny is we celebrate. I mean, there's a lot of podcasts out there celebrating the entrepreneur life and you can achieve, and that's all fine. But I also think, you know, that's like looking at a balance sheet and only looking at the assets and never looking at the liabilities, right?
Yep. Yep. That's a good way to put it.
You got to dive and say, all right, these are the assets, these are the positive things, and this is what this entrepreneur life can bring you. But you better also look at the liabilities and the costs associated with that. And what I have found in my own world is not a lot of people talk about that. And so I would say, you know, one of the reasons I wrote this book was you learn a few things the hard way. You see some good friends and, you know, that self-destruct their marriages, or, you know, maybe they push it too far in their business and it becomes an idol and they end up committing fraud. And, you know, in this town, I know people that have gone to jail for fraud. I know business people that have gone to jail for murder. Mm-hmm. I know people that have lost multiple marriages. And these are all people that you would say these were business leaders.
Yeah.
And I think if we, you know, might have spent a little bit more time, or they might have spent a little bit more time understanding, you know, how do I protect against the downside of being a hard driven person? They might have been able to stay out a little bit of that.
Yeah. I've got a couple questions here. I want to dive in on some of the stuff you mentioned. So you talk about liabilities, and I know, you know, here personally, Adrian on my team and I have had some really good conversations, you know, in person, but also on the Carrot Cast about stuff that, like you said, most entrepreneurs don't talk about because it's not the sexy thing to market out there about that entrepreneurial lifestyle. But it's things that I know I experience. I was on a podcast with someone just recently, and they had talked about, you know, entrepreneurial depression or whatever you want to call it. It's a very common thing with high achievers. And it's something, like you said, it's something, whether you actually consider it depression or something else, you're in a funk, you know, you're in a funk and it's hard to get out of it. And I know you really explore that in a big way in the book. What for you are ways that you kind of got out of some of those funks? Because after you sold that first company, you went through a period of your life where you kind of weren't the man, you know, anymore for a little bit.
Yeah, no, I went from having the golden touch to the black touch, and it was painful. It was healthy in the end because I look at it and say, you know, success is a lousy teacher, as Bill Gates suggests, you know, because it seduces normally smart people into thinking they can't make a mistake. And so, you know, with Bill Gates, it's kind of interesting. I'm not a huge, follower of Gates, but I do remember literally being on the golf course in somewhere, the desert, after I had sold the company, and pondering in my own head, I'm like, how does somebody like that, who has all the money they need and beyond that, stay motivated? Mm-hmm. You know, and you got to remember, I was only in my late 20s, you know, early 30s. And so I hadn't really zeroed in on my purpose. And so even though I had some financial success, I was like, well, now what? Are my best days behind me? Mm-hmm. Because that's awful. That in itself was depressing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In their late 20s, early 30s, it was hard to really know what I should be about. But the other side of it was, you know, what I've observed in terms of this depression that can come at times. For me, what I recognized is it's really disappointment. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that hard driving people wrestle with is they set big goals. And because they're capable, because they see things maybe before other people see them, or they tell themselves a story that this is achievable. And sometimes they do that without actually talking to counselors and people who help them get their head on straight. They just kind of pick this goal and they're like, I'm going for it. Well, then, you know, reality sets in and it takes longer. And so we get disappointed because we expected to be there by now. Or maybe we make that investment and it completely blows up and we're embarrassed by it. Or we just don't get what we want. And because we want big things and we want a lot of big things, and not just stuff, but we want to achieve, you know, we have to learn to process that disappointment in healthy ways.
Yeah.
And so what I learned is that that's not a skill that people talk about much. It's not something that I hear in our churches. It's not something that I hear business people talking about. It's not something that I hear many entrepreneurs talking too much about, is how do you process the disappointments that come when your expectations aren't met? Because at the end of the day, we're not God. We don't just get a wave our wand and everything bends to conform to our will. Mm-hmm. We have to deal with the fact that number one, we're not going to get the things we want. And also two, that's okay. It's actually a good thing, because that that disappointment or those failures or those not being able to get what we want actually shapes our character and teaches us things that we need, right?
Yeah. Dude, I think something that's even more dangerous than the disappointment, and you bring it up in the book, and it's something I've identified myself over the years, is you use the words, like I said, kind of the curvature of the earth. In my mind, I've always got this visual of, you know, you're out in the ocean, you're on the horizon, very similar concept.
Yeah.
And you're sailing toward the horizon. Like you say in the book, you can never reach the horizon. Horizon is always changing. By the time you get there, there's a new horizon. Right. And for me, I think it's almost like when I've gotten those funks, it's not the times I was disappointed that I was in the biggest funk, is when I continually had reached those goals.
Yeah.
And like, as soon as I reached it, man, I saw the new goal. And so you're like, and you're going for that. I never got off and celebrated.
Yeah.
I never had gratitude that I got that. You're in this continual mindset of yearning versus feeling grateful. You know, it's like, oh, you're continually yearning for something you don't have, this goal you're going after, instead of being grateful for what you actually did or accomplished or have. And dude, that's when I've gotten the biggest funks. And how do you now, you talk about it in the book, but how do you get out of those funks? What is that kind of that tool for you?
Yeah, I coined a phrase during this dark period between my business, wins. I called it a gratitude adjustment, and I didn't have that name at first, but then it came to me and I liked it because it kind of rolled off the tongue like attitude adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I would find when I was racked with anxiety, I would be, you know, on an airplane or in a shower somewhere where nobody could bug me. And I would just start thinking about, all right, get your head on straight here. Let's review reality, you know. And I would think, you know, I'm a person of faith, and so I would think about God's love for me, and I would think about my own forgiveness through Christ. And then I would do that slowly, and I would think very clearly. All right, I'm not holding this world together. This was somebody else's plan. I'm part of it. I can relax a little, and I could think about all the things, you know, I've been forgiven for, because just like any other person on this call, I've got this long list of all the negative things that I can remember and pay attention to. And I can believe that about myself, or I can believe that I've, in this case, been forgiven. And then I would start to zero and say, all right, let's get those big things. You know, my family's good. I'm forgiven. Now, what are all the areas in my life that I've been given responsibility for? And I would begin to think about those and think about the influence I could have and to express gratitude for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I found I was doing that more and more often, and it became kind of my ritual, so to speak, of saying, listen, I got to get my head on straight. And what I find for myself, and I think this is true for others, is we drift, right? Mm-hmm. So we can get all clear on these things. The big things are handled. I've got all these responsibilities. This is great. I get a moment of clarity, and then I go out and I go back to my work. And it could be a week later before I'm confronted with something else that disappoints me, yeah, or whatever. And I'm back in that emotional battle. And you know, the battle happens between our ears. And for me, I developed this process. I call it my gratitude adjustment, where, you know, I use it to keep me oriented on what I believe is most important. And really, it's shifting away from feelings into truth, right? And I know you're a big mindset guy, and that's, yep, one of the many things I admire about you, is that you're aware that it's our thinking that often holds us back or locks us into those really unproductive and frankly destructive, mm-hmm, places. And it doesn't have to be that way. And so I'm not a big silver bullet guy, like, oh, just do this and your problems will go away. But I tell you, with gratitude, I actually believe that gratitude is about as close as you can get to a silver bullet, because, mm-hmm, for an entrepreneur, you know, I often hear people say that phrase, if it is to be, it is up to me. And I don't agree with that. I get what people are trying to say. But if we're all honest and we look at where we were born, our gifts, our opportunities, our economic structure, we can go down this list of things that we really had very little to do with in the first place. How can we then conclude that if it is to be, it's up to me? We have to believe that good things are in our life that we didn't work for, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean we don't work hard. It just means that we've got some resources here that we can be stewarding, right? And so for me, to get my head on straight about what I'm using as resources and how those resources came about, it's very liberating because I get out of this mindset that I've got to fix it all. Mm-hmm. And I start to move on. No, what am I responsible for? And where do I go to work today? And I can work, the future will take care of itself. I just need to focus on what's in front of me now.
So. Yep. And kind of to finish out that analogy I kind of brought up before with the horizon stuff. I know for me, you know, when I've been really intentional with going, okay, quit acting like I'm like sailing in this open ocean, you know, always chasing the horizon because that always changes. Your goals always change. What you talked about before is, you know, going after things that we want. What I've experienced is what you want changes too. Like as you get closer to it, it's kind of, you always want something you don't have. And so on the ocean thing, now mentally, I kind of picture little islands, you know, where it's like, okay, there's kind of my ideal out there. That's my ideal way out there. I know now that it's going to change. So I know that I'll likely never reach that ideal because it's always going to change, just like the horizon always changes. But I can go after this little island. Like I can sail over to the island. I can go after that. I can see it right there. It's not moving. I can see it. I can get there. I can get off of the boat. I can get all of the people around me that helped us get there. We can celebrate it. We can give high fives, have some margaritas, whatever the heck we're going to do. Yep. And we get back on the boat. You know, we're grateful for reaching that. We had time to kind of let it set in. Then we go to the next island. And if we can kind of island hop through life, I think for me, I know that's when I've really had my happiest times, is when I actually do get off that boat, actually do celebrate it. Like you said, look back at what I'm grateful for, not always looking forward at what do I not have yet or where have I not gone yet.
I buy that totally. I think that's necessary. It's hard to do, just to stop and to, a couple reasons. Number one, we don't necessarily like the accolades, and we're not in this for the pats on the back.
Yeah.
And so when you stop to celebrate, sometimes it seems a little bit, self-indulgent, but I do think it's necessary, and it's a discipline that we need. On the opposite, you know, entitled people always want credit for everything they do. And for us, we look at that and we're just like, we're rolling our eyes at them, right?
Yep.
But the truth of it is, we do have needs for validation too, and we need to stop and let people say nice things about us from time to time because it helps us, or at least understand how we're making a difference. There's something that you hit on that I've been wrestling with lately, because I'm in a transition. I sold the business. I'm making plans for what's next and letting
Before you talk about this, let's kind of build that gap. So the transition is, we talked about your first business that you and your dad started and sold in your late 20s for, you know, millions. That next phase, you'd invested money into businesses that didn't quite work out, but it sounds like it was a really big learning phase. And we can dig into that phase more if you want to. And then now, what have you been doing the past 7, 8, 9 years, however many years it's been with that latest company?
Okay, perfect. I'll get to that. I'll talk, just give me half a second on this other idea. And that is, sometimes, you know, one of the reasons we fail to commit to things is we are worried about limiting our other choices. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we can think, well, if I do that, I'm committed to it forever. So one of the things I'm learning about here, and it's a little bit around your island hopping, is, you know, we commit to things for a season. We don't have to make lifelong commitments, but maybe it's 3 years, 5 years or whatever. And for me, that feels a little bit more realistic because we know we can't make too big of a dent in a year or 6 months, right? Yep. But, you know, we're not signing up for things for life just because we commit to them with everything, right? So, so after selling the first business, I went through that, you know, that kind of that dark period, wrestled with a lot of change and a lot of purposelessness. And it was during that period of time that I came to the conclusion through prayer and hard knocks that I just wasn't a very grateful person. Mm-hmm. And I really started to wrestle with gratitude and try to understand it and understand the need for it. And it was during that context that I got an opportunity to lead a company that I was actually an investor in. And so we partnered with a overseas firm to specify a product, and then we negotiated the exclusive rights to this product. And basically the product made smartphones work better inside large buildings, right? And so in the early years, we negotiated the exclusive rights based on a minimum purchase amount, where we purchase a certain amount of gear and sell it. Mm-hmm. So we had to do literally everything. The manufacturer was great at manufacturing products, but we had to create all the sales material, all the sales channels, win the first deals and all that. Mm-hmm. And we spun it out of another company. So I was employee number zero. And so I had the privilege of hiring employee number one and growing it. It was a challenge in the early years. I mean, we were just scraping by, asking our partner to be really patient with us because we were sowing a lot of seeds, but nothing was blooming, right? And, you know, but over time, we won some early clients and began to recruit in a team. And what was really fun about this, Trevor, is we had a chance to build a culture from scratch, mm-hmm. which I'd never really done before. When my dad and I worked together, you know, he's such a strong personality. I think he defined a lot of the culture.
Yeah.
In this case, you know, I was able to work with my key guys and just sit down in Starbucks and write out, how do we want to roll? Who do we want to be? Mm-hmm. You know, how'd the other guys do it ways that we didn't like? And what's our opportunity to do it differently? And so over the years, you know, we started to get some traction, and then we were kind of adding like $1 million per employee. So we were at three employees. We had $3 million and seven and then 15. And then towards the end, it really got exciting as we went from like 15 to 35. In the last full year I had the business, we did $58 million with about 58 people.
Yeah.
And by then, frankly, as a, you know, as an entrepreneur and a builder, I realized, okay, it's time to make some shifts. And then our manufacturing partner, which was a publicly traded company, they really wanted to take control of their brand and their distribution in the U.S. And so what was fun about this is it was one of those situations where I had two competing objectives. I wanted to I wanted to make sure that the team was taken care of. I had, you know, 58 families that I didn't want to leave them in a bad position.
Yep.
And second, I had shareholders who had paid the price to build this thing, and I wanted to make sure that they were rewarded. And I wanted to do both of those. I didn't want to do one or the other. Mm. And so we were able to negotiate a nice sale that gave a great return to our shareholders, three of us. And then we also set the team up. We were able to take some of the proceeds from the sale and allocate them to the leadership team, which we really felt like had carried the weight.
Cool.
And then to hand off. So, it, substantially all the employees were retained, and the company is going to do more money than when I left it, which for me, you know, that's as good as you can get.
Yeah.
Once you hand a company off, I mean, you realize that it's just not yours anymore. And as much as you have great intentions, you can only hope that those things follow through. So we had some great projects. My book cover has the Empire State Building on it. Well, that was one of our marquee projects where our product is used to enhance the cellular phone coverage in there. And so we were able to do the New York subway and, you know, Autzen Stadium in Oregon and Nike World headquarters. And so we had some really fun, nice projects. But mostly, you know, what I enjoyed about it was I had a chance to build a team. We were a distributed company, so we were all over the country, and it was, and I know you work this way too.
Yeah.
We lived in the cloud and we lived on airplanes and we kept our people close to the customers. And it was a lot of twists and turns in growing a business like that.
Man, so a question that popped in my mind as you're talking about selling the company, you know, that you worked your butt off with your team to build this second company. What'd you do differently that second time around? Because this time, you know, I was there while you were experiencing this. We had lunch. I remember when the wire transfer for the sale came through. So I was like there experiencing it. But yeah. I don't think I've really ever asked you this question. What did you do differently this time around that has made it to where you didn't fall into the same traps as before?
Sure. Well, you know, once you step on a bear trap, you're kind of focused on not stepping on them again. Well, one of the things I did is I determined that in the future I would take my dollars and I would put them in the hands of somebody that knows how to manage dollars. Mm-hmm. I don't consider myself to be a great investor. I'm a good leader and I'm good at building companies, but I'm crappy at looking at financials and making a prediction on whether something's going to work or not. Mm-hmm. I just am. Part of that is I'm just not that interested in financials and those kind of things. I understand them and they're important, but I don't have any passion for that. Yeah. I like people. I like words. I like ideas. I like leadership. Mm-hmm. And so what that means for me is I always have to have people around me who can fill in those gaps in the areas that I just have no zip for it. Mm-hmm. One of the things I had a chance to do is get to know some financial advisors who typically deal with larger and wealthy families. I don't consider myself in that mix, but I'm glad that they accepted me as a client. And so I have some dollars set aside locally with a traditional financial manager. I mentioned David Littlejohn, mm-hmm. doing a fine job. And then I have a larger chunk set aside with people that manage dollars as a profession. Mm-hmm. And I've had to discipline myself and even tell them, I don't want to put my money in my new startups because I shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
Now I will tell you, a year out, I'm starting to identify a few things where I can put some money to work, but only in the cases where I understand the business, where there's a leader in place that I'm going to be able to counsel and coach more as a chairman role, mm-hmm. And to be much more measured in it. I think in the last time I had this sense of, oh, these opportunities are going to pass me by. I've got to participate. And of course, and I had a lot of money where I could just participate. Now I flipped that on its head. My bias answer is no, I don't have any money because I gave it to these other guys to, like you say, to send the little dollar bills out so they maybe come back with some other dollars.
Yeah.
But the balance is I'm not against putting a little skin in the game when I think I can make a difference. So. Mm-hmm. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. No, you're good. I guess one last thing I'll throw out to you on that too, on the mindset side. So we brought up the book many times. And once again, guys and gals, get the darn book. It's, $20, $25, whatever it is. Go to readambition.com, or you can just look it up online and go to Amazon or wherever the heck you want to buy books, but it's Ambition Leading with Gratitude. And then Seth Buechley, Buechley. Google it right now. Find it and buy it before you finish the podcast. Push pause right now. Go buy it. Because I know that if you've been listening to this podcast up to this point, you're probably experiencing many of those same things that we're talking about. You probably experienced some of that angst when you are successful, but you're not happy. Or maybe you're experiencing those points where you're not successful yet, but you're still not content, and we should be, you know? So on both sides of those things, this book is going to help you in a massive way, and it can be one of the best, $20 you've invested this year. And it's perfect timing too. If you're listening to this as the time that we're rolling this out, which is around the end of the year, guys, we need to be getting our mindsets right at the end of the year so we can really crush this next year. If you're listening to this some other time during the year, it doesn't matter. Like, every day is a mindset day. So get the darn book, go to readambition.com and pick it up. So, a question I've got here for you is on that mindset side. So this time around, have you been really, really implementing, the gratitude stuff in a big way and some of the other things you talk about in the book this time more than you did last time? And has that led to a massive difference for you just in contentment and happiness?
It has. I'm not impatient at this point. What mm-hmm. matters to me most is I get it right. I'm not feeling like if I don't move now, things are going to pass me by. I also realize now, and I write about this in the book, there's something natural that happens after you achieve a big goal. You sell a business, or a downside, you get a divorce or somebody you love dies. I mean, I had a lot of those things. I didn't get a divorce, but mm-hmm. I had two really close people, my father and my mentor, passed in the last year. Yeah. I sold a business. And so being aware of, okay, when this happens, those are little traumatic things, and you got to give yourself some space to deal with it and realize it's not a great time to be making rash decisions. You got to be patient. You got to let it play out. And really being open-handed as I think through about what I want to do next, how it aligns with my purpose. And, the back half of this book, we've talked about the front part, which is what it means to be ambitious and the implications and influence of that. We talked about the middle part is, gratitude is a huge thing that ambitious people need. And science suggests that it has the greatest impact on those that are least ambitious or sorry, least grateful. So let me say that again. Gratitude has the greatest impact on those that are least grateful. And yeah. I would argue that driven people are often the least grateful, right? The back half of this is the part that I really focus on now, which is three things. How do I grow my potential, or how do I reach for my potential? How do I impact my world, which is the people that I've been entrusted to lead? And then that last piece is, how do I leave a legacy? And so as I'm measuring opportunities now, I have to ask myself, all right, is this going to be an area where I get to grow? Is it going to tap into the potential I have? And you and I have talked often about, when you find that intersection of what you're passionate about and what you're good at, how do you zero in and stay there as much as you can, right? Yeah. And so I I measure the opportunities by that question. It has to pass that test, right? Mm-hmm. And then I move into, all right, would I be able to have an impact? Would I be able to speak into people's lives, be challenged, be around people that I would enjoy, so we can win as a team kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, you know, when it's on my tombstone, that what kind of legacy will I leave? Does the work I'm doing have a potential to have lasting impact or not, right? Mm-hmm. And so I kind of use that filter as my primary filter, not, wow, do I think this opportunity is going to pass me by and can I make some money here? Mm-hmm. It becomes more of, listen, there's lots of opportunities out there. If I pass up on this one, I believe there's another one coming, kind of that abundance mindset. But as I filter through these, how do I use the ones that, how do I use that filter of how do I lead with gratitude? I mean, mm-hmm. that's really the way I summarize it, is trying to lead with gratitude.
Man, so you've got your three things that you kind of grade all of the opportunities, or just probably just your everyday life. Am I doing these things the most today? And I want everyone listening to this podcast to come up with your version of those three, you know, because I think we all see that people in general, especially in the United States, are very transactional these days. They're very transactional. On social media, even people are transacting messages back and forth. They're not having full conversations. They're not connecting with people. With making money in this market that we're in the real estate market, oftentimes people get into it and they're very transactional. Let's chase down the next deal. Let's do the next deal. I've got some money. I'm celebrating the money, holding the money up as an idol almost, you know, instead of in the investment mindset. Am I investing my time and my energy into building something that's long-term and builds a legacy? And I understand everyone's got to get their back off the wall. You know, you've got to get the back off the wall, pay the bills. At that point, you're probably very transactional, right? Transactional, get it coming in. I got to get it coming in. Once you do, we need to shift immediately into that longer term thinking that most people don't ever shift into, which is such a shame. So come up with your three or five or whatever it is, non-negotiables in life.
I like three because I can only remember three things at a time. So everything right. in my world tends to, you know, boil down to three if I can help it. Right?
I love it. And you dive into each one of those sections more in the book. I'm looking at the book right now. And dude, one thing that hit me, this isn't really even related directly to what we just talked about, but one thing that hit me, and this quote, you said it at a talk you did here locally at one of our entrepreneur talks a couple months ago. And you said, too often we spend our days scouring the digital pawn shop of our smartphone while ignoring the treasures we already have, particularly at home. And dude, that hit me because I've been really guilty in drifting, like you mentioned, where I'll get to the point where it's like, I don't care about my phone. It's over there. And then some days, dude, the phone's over there. And then for some reason, my mind and like eyes are like looking at the phone, trying, it's like pulling you over there. And it's the worst thing in the world. I'm not saying you even do this well or don't do, like, what do you do with that? You know, cause have you been able to find a way to completely detach from it more?
No, I haven't. I drift. All I can say is I think it starts with awareness. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that we as a society or a time in history even understand what's happening to us. Mm-hmm. I don't think we understand what's happening to our kids and the way that they're processing information. I'm not saying it's all negative. I think it is all negative, mm-hmm. You know, I felt a wave of emotions as you said, scouring the digital pawn shop. That thought came to me as a conviction, not mm-hmm. as a recipe for others. It was a conviction for me. It's like, dude, you have everything you need. You know, are you sitting down with your kid for long enough to get into his world and making a connection on anything? Mm-hmm. That 5 minutes spent there is so much better than what you could spend it checking out information. So, you know, I think I don't know how to fix it other than to talk about it, to give other people permission to hold me accountable. Mm-hmm. I notice myself being judgmental of others in this area. So yeah. That's giving me extra motivation to make sure that I'm beginning to change. And I do some simple things now. I'll often leave it in the car when I go do things and whatnot. So all I can say is it's a journey, man, but this is a beast of an addiction that people have. And just like any other addiction, you don't deal with it like it's trying to kill you, you're probably not going to have success. And mm-hmm. so probably stop there.
Yeah, no, I love it. And the reason I brought that up is because I struggle with it, man. And I'm not a really emotional guy, but the things that get me emotional are, I mean, there was one moment just in the past couple months where I was sitting there, you know, playing with Sydney, our youngest daughter, in McKinley. And I had the phone there with me, you know, it was in my pocket. And for some reason, I had that urge to reach in my pocket and grab the darn phone out and look at it. Like, there was nothing important that I had to ever look at. I didn't get a text message. Like, I just opened it up and you flip to the damn Facebook app. And what caught me, it wasn't even me that caught me. That's the bad thing. It was McKinley and Sydney, a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, who noticed it and said, "Dad, look at us. Pay attention to us." I'm like, oh man, like I started to tear up. I'm going, this is something I've got to kick. It's going to be tough, but I'm seriously debating going from the old iPhone down to like the Nokia regular phone, man, because I like you said, I really think it's a cancer right now where we look at it as this blessing, which it is kind of a cool blessing to have access to the stuff at your fingertips. But the cancer is that we use it as time filler instead of thinking, instead of growing, instead of connecting.
Well, so I remember, and maybe this is a book, Trevor, since now I love writing books.
Dude.
All right. We all have the same information. So if you go back in history, you know, Gutenberg Press, you know, got the Bible into people's hands, which changed the world, right? Mm-hmm. Then you had all sorts of other things about informations and encyclopedias. And so everything has been, you know, now you can get the Library of Congress and you can get all the works from MIT. So make a long story short, if knowledge is power, which is a little bit different than information, but let's just say information is power. Everybody's got the same information.
Yeah.
So what is it about, and even with education, and I won't go too far down this path. Somebody said the other day, so if we're teaching people to memorize stuff, what's the point of that? They have Siri on their phone now. So there's no advantage to memorizing stuff. So where I'm going with this is, we all have information in the information age. So now what's going to make the difference? Mm-hmm. And it's not information. It's going to be character, leadership, principles, values, personal time. It's like all of those other things. And so that's the challenge, I think, is how do we say, all right, it's no longer about information and knowledge. It's about something else, the human connection, human touch, one-on-one exchanges of values. That's where my head's at these days.
Dude, you've nailed it. And I'm looking at my core values poster here across the wall right now. And you know what, like one of my favorite core values of Carrots, but it's also, you know, these are life core values that we live by, is be a beacon of positivity and possibility. And that's, dude, literally, that's the only thing that I look at with, you know, smartphones, stuff like that, this podcast. I'm looking at it going, man, there's all this information out there. There's this stuff that can be distracting. I want to be the beacon of positivity and possibility for people. If they're out there consuming information, I want to make sure that it's moving them in the right direction. And the more that we can get people creating versus consuming, I think the more that the world's going to actually change and go the right way. The more people consume and the fewer people create, the world's going to head in the wrong direction. You know, so those of you guys who are listening to this, we're going to wrap it up right now. We talked about a lot of different things, all the way from ambition to gratitude, which I really want to drill that into everyone. Oprah Winfrey, I don't remember her exact words, but she's famous for really putting a lot of stock and credit toward gratitude in her life for helping her be happy and successful. And Seth has walked through his journey with this book, Ambition, Leading with Gratitude. Like I said, guys and gals, go get it at readambition.com or just Google it, Ambition, Leading with Gratitude. Put in the word Seth in there in Google and you'll find it on Amazon and pick it up. And one thing that you can do, with this is, I've bought my first batch of books. I'm going to buy many batches of books because kind of one thing that I tend to do is once I find a book that resonates with me in that phase of life, I tend to buy a bunch of them and give them to people. And that's one way for me to be that beacon of positivity and help people continually improve. And I really urge you guys to do the same, whether it's this book or something else. It could be like little quotes. It doesn't matter. Go out there and in this season, be grateful for those around you and help them improve their lives. Help them be grateful as well. And get the book, readambition.com. And Seth's got some other great stuff over there. Man, I could talk for hours with you. Maybe we'll do another podcast to dig deeper into some of this stuff. But any parting words? What kind of advice do you have for people who may be living this right now?
You know, the one idea that I really want people to understand is that satisfaction is found on the other side of gratitude. Mm-hmm. It's not, you can't get to satisfaction and contentment through achievement, which is kind of how we're wired, is that we need to understand, got to go after gratitude. And once we go after gratitude, things get better. And so with that, I want to say, Trevor, I'm grateful to be on your call on the Carrot Cast. I've enjoyed listening to, your past episodes, and I really appreciate your audience, because I know people who will listen to you are zeroed in and chasing the same things you're chasing, and so I'm hoping they'll be chasing gratitude after this call. So thank you again,
dude. I love it. Thanks for coming on again, Seth. I'll see you in the office, I'm sure, today or tomorrow or something like that. But guys, I'm not gonna say it, I can't say it too many times, go get the darn book Ambition, Leading with Gratitude. Read ambition.com or follow Seth at sethbueckley.com. Google it, it'll come up some way, shape, or form. Just guess how to spell his name. Thanks, guys. Have an amazing rest of the week, and go out there and live a life of passion and purpose. And like Seth said, I'm gonna finish it with this: is if you're banging your head against the wall trying to find that passion, trying to find that purpose, like all of us do, don't put the pressure on yourself, because we live in seasons. So what's your passion and purpose today? Might not be in 6 years or 10 years. So find something that you can really push forward with and make a difference today. Lock down on that, read the book, be grateful for it, and go make your difference. Thanks, guys and gals. Have an amazing rest of the week. So I want you to pull back and do a little self-evaluation right now, okay? After listening to Seth's story, after listening to the framework that he now lives his life on, and hopefully you've gone over to readambition.com and got a copy of his book, or go to Amazon and buy it, okay? Either way, guys and girls, I want you to do a self-evaluation, because once again, we start as entrepreneurs for a specific reason. It could be lifestyle for you, it could be freedom, it could be the income. If it's the income for you, that's going to eventually pretty darn quickly lead to you being unhappy if it's just focused on the income. Could be the legacy, could be the impact, could be all of them, okay? Focus on how happy you are right now, truly at your core, okay? Not how amazing your life looks from the outside, not how amazing your life actually is that we're not grateful for. How happy and grateful are you right now? Are you leaving the legacy you truly want to leave? Are you spending that, investing that time with your friends, your family, your children that you should be, and in a very mentally present way? Are you actually heading toward building a legacy right now, or are you just kind of stagnant? No matter what it is, guys and girls, take a self-evaluation right now and figure out how important it is for you to figure out this happiness equation, okay? Because as ambitious people, we're the ones that are out there changing the world. We're the ones that are out there going out there changing the world, building amazing teams of amazing people, making great impacts, okay? And without us really having our eye on the real prize, it's not the money, it's not building a business, it's building a life with intentionality that makes you insanely happy, purposeful, intentional once again, and leaves a legacy that others can build upon. That's why we do it. And if you're not heading in that direction, you need to go through. And like Seth said, do a gratitude adjustment. It's the simplest thing in the world, but do it daily. Okay. And like we were saying, this isn't something Seth made up. It's not something we made up. It's something that's been around probably almost ever since, communication has ever been around. But for some reason, the vast majority of us never, ever, ever create a routine that's consistent, that consistently shows our gratitude for the things in our lives, okay? Especially those of us in America, in Canada, wherever you're listening to this, in a place where we have the things, all the tools, all the resources, all the assets to be happy. And it doesn't matter what you grew up as far as your income level in your upbringing. It doesn't matter any of that stuff. You now have full control over your happiness. You now have control over your mind, or you hopefully can gain control of your mind to lead you into a happy, purposeful, and intentional life. Go get readambition.com and hit us with comments. Hit us with comments, guys and gals, on the blog about this episode if you resonated with it. If you're going through any of the things we talked about, hit us with a comment on the blog. We want to know what you're going through so we can help you, okay? Last but not least, check out CarrotCast at CarrotCast.com for our other episodes. We have lots of other episodes, guys and gals, with amazing real estate investors, people who are building portfolios into the thousands of units, people who are crushing it, buying 10 to 20 houses a month, and also just people who are doing certain things amazingly well, certain marketing things, certain mindset things. We want you guys to be a well-rounded entrepreneur, well-rounded individual, and not grow this business for the sake of growth. Remove money as the main motivator, and in place of that, put passion, purpose, and intentionality. Guys and gals, go get Ambition, the book. Find it on readambition.com, and we'll talk to you later.